Hello, my name is Andreina.
And my name is Gabriela, and this is Wicks and Candles,
a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, Mr. Turner. So Gabby, here we are, finally recording our second episode of the season. And the movie we chose is one that we wanted to see for a long time, Mr. Turner.
Nene, it's quite special because we are doing this like the Impressionist artist when they painted on plein air, where they took the tubes out to the nature and painted spontaneously the landscape. We are recording this episode just immediately after watching the film together, which is which has been a very nice experience. So let's see how this works out.
Yeah, let's see how this works. We are being inspired by the painters, spontaneous. And yeah, we watched the movie together just before starting recording, just so that we have all the images and ideas fresh in our minds. So before we start, Gabby, can you give us some facts about the movie?
Sure, Nene. Mr. Turner is a biopic from 2014, and it's based on the last 25 years of the life of the artist J.M.W. Turner. It was written and directed by Mike Leigh, who is maybe mostly famous for his films Topsy Turvy and Happy Go Lucky. The screenplay was written by Mike Leigh with the help of the research by historian Jacqueline Riding. The cast is superb. It stars so many legendary and established actors and actresses, like, for example, in the main role of William Turner, we see Timothy Spall. And on his side, we see Dorothy Atkinson, Paul Jason, Marion Bailey, and Martin Savage, just to mention a few. The film premiered at the Palme d'Or at the 2014 Cannes Film Festival, where the main actors, Timothy Spall, won the award for Best Actor, and the cinematography also received a special jury prize. Maybe also some accolades, of course. If there are some Oscar nominations, we would like to mention those. And it got indeed 4 nominations for the main technical categories, like cinematography, costume design, and musical score, which I found very, very beautiful. So, yes, those were the most important facts about the film. How about some facts about the artist himself, Nene? Can you tell us something about William Turner?
Yeah, thank you for those facts about the movie, Gabby. Yeah, I have to be very honest that I've never studied Turner, except maybe briefly a couple paintings as a student. But here are some facts that we quickly researched online. So J.M.W. Turner was born in London in 1775. And he was considered an English romantic painter, printmaker, and watercolorist. And an interesting fact about his biography is that he came from a very modest family. His father was a barber and, appropriately, a wig maker. And I think his mom was from a family of butchers. So definitely a modest working class background. The thing is that he was a child prodigy, and he enrolled at the Royal Academy of Arts at 14, and he exhibited his first work at the Academy at 15.
Incredible.
So obviously he painted throughout his life. when he died, he left more than 550 oil paintings, 2,000 watercolors, and 30,000 works on paper, so drawings and sketches, etc. When he died, a portion of his money that he left behind, he gave it to the Royal Academy of Arts. And still today, the Academy occasionally awards the Turner Medal for selected outstanding painters and artists today. One of the most interesting parts about Turner's history as an artist is that he made very clear when he was alive that when he died, he wanted to pass on his entire legacy to all his work, all his painting together. He wanted to leave it to the British nation. And that's what he tried to do. That's what they tried to do after he died. But there was a disagreement, and a little bit after his death, the British Parliament started to allow his painting to be lent and exhibited outside of London. But his real desire was for all of his work to be given in its entirety to the British nation and elevate British painting this way.
Very good. He did leave an immense legacy on works.
But Gabby, before we go into the actual discussion, we haven't talked about why we chose this movie specifically as part of our artist series that we are planning to do for the podcast. Do you recall our conversation about this movie? I know I had my reasons. What about you?
Well, we talked about this briefly in our previous episode when we discussed the beautiful film of Hilma. We both agreed not too long ago that we have a special desire to focus somehow on art. So while we were making the selection of films for this season of Wicks and Candles, we went on a quest looking for period films which are focused on art in some way. And it was unavoidable to take Mr. Turner on our list.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot that we have made a list, but yeah, for sure, this was a clear choice. We have to talk about this movie. I remember when this film came out. I really clearly remember that I was just desperate to go watch it, and I never made my way to it. You know, and it's a movie from 2014, so it's been 11 years. So I was just really, when we decided to do this kind of series, I was so excited that I was finally going to watch this movie. I remember all the conversations about Timothy Spall at the time, and I was just reading a review after review after review at the time, and I never watched the movie, so finally we're here. So
yes, Nene, I can perfectly understand how you felt back then, your curiosity back then. I have absolutely no memories of this film when it came out, but I might have a good reason because it was the year my daughter was born. But as soon as you told me, Gabby, if we are talking about art, we definitely have to consider Mr. Turner. Of course, I was immediately attracted to the idea. I am currently, as you know, taking a art history course. And I was like, of course we do this. I might need it for my studies on realism. So it was very fitting, and it was indeed a big feast for the eye. When talking about Turner, people might be familiar with his works. I think we immediately think of light, and brightness. And this is certainly something that, in general, the film certainly tried to highlight, that the core element of Turner's painting was light. In fact, the German translation or the German title for the film is The Master of Light. Oh. So when we think about this and we just briefly touch on his style and just highlight what he really depicts or depicted the best, which was the changes of lights and moods on the landscape. This all certainly had a certain purpose. And I think I would like to throw already here one word, if you want to say maybe just one comment on this. Turner is immediately associated with the sublime. Would you like to say something about that, Nene?
Yes, of course I would like to talk about the sublime. It is one of my favorite words, one of my favorite concepts. And in fact, I've been trying to learn more about it recently, and I've been reading a lot about it because it's such a difficult word to define. But in terms of art, as it relates to painting specifically, the sublime was defined as the feeling one gets when you are confronted with something so grand, so much bigger than yourself as a human being, that you have a feeling of awe, but also terror, but also understanding the beauty of what you're seeing. So it is a very subtle kind of specific kind of feeling. So the sublime describe that kind of transcendence through nature specifically. And because Turner painted, he's famous for his seascapes, like shipwrecks, you know, all the kind of paintings in with the ocean, boats, ships. He's considered kind of like, he's mentioned next to sublime because his paintings often capture nature, the awesome form of nature, and you know, and the tiny human confronted towards this phenomenon that is much greater than themselves. So the sublime is a very key concept, especially during the Romantic period. You know, obviously that's why it's for me such a. I'm just fascinated by this concept because it's. I often think about the sublime not only in terms of the our movement or the peer, but also in our day-to-day life and how we can find transcendence through beauty in our lives every day. It's a bit of an obsession, to be honest with you. So it was very excited to watch the movie and see how they, you know, how they were talking about this topic. And actually, they didn't talk too much about it in the movie.
Yes, which might take us directly into our discussion.
Yeah.
How about we start with our first question?
Yeah, should we go to the questionnaire? The Wicks and Candles questionnaire? Okay, yeah, let's do it. So Gabby, let's start. What is your shining candle? One thing you loved about Mr. Turner?
Well, Nene, it was a very lengthy film. It was over two hours, 2 hours and a half. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of art shown in the film. This was very beautiful. So to see the scenes of Turner going into the Royal Academy and being surrounded by all these paintings, that was really beautiful. But actually, that's not my shining candle.
Okay. All right.
My shining candle is actually the landscape shots they made. Because as we just mentioned, he was a specialist on portraying landscapes, nature, in a very magnificent way. So he had the talent of taking the majesty and this, how you mentioned it, this force of nature being bigger than anything, capturing that onto a canvas. And they were very keen in the film to portray what he saw. His paintings for the time, we're talking about the mid-19th century, his paintings were very avant-garde. They were very abstract. Yeah, if you want to say it, they didn't have clear lines or clear shapes. They were done with very loose brushes. It was all very misty. It was actually built on color, not shapes or figures or lines. It was all built on colors and color contrast and colors harmony. So it was a very new style for the time. So if you see a Turner painting, it's very evocative, and you feel the warmth of the light, but you cannot really see the landscape. You cannot really picture the landscape as it was when you're standing in front of a painting of Turner. So I think the film did that very well, to portray what was he seeing and portraying. The magnificent sunsets and sunrises. There's a scene where he's sitting at the coast, and he is looking into the sea, and the sun is still bright, but it looks like already like a afternoon sun slowly setting, and you can then have a feeling of, this is the landscape that really overtook Turner, that really grabbed him and captured his imagination. Yes, and his fascination. So I think the landscape scenes were very well done and gave you as a viewer a very good feeling of what he was trying to convey, what he was seeing and trying to convey in the camera. So I think the art that I mentioned before, that was like a half shining candle, all the art, because of course I'm everything where there's a painting is beautiful for me. But the landscape scenes, I think they were very well done, very beautiful.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you for the shining candle. Gabby, before I say my own shining candle, no wonder that is one of your shining candles, like the landscape as shown in the movie. The cinematographer, as you mentioned earlier, received a special jury prize for the cinematography, because truly one of the most fun things about movies about art is to see how the movie itself might reflect the artist's style. How do the filmmakers incorporate that into the movie itself, not only in how they show the actual paintings that they're doing, that's another technical thing, that, you know, how do they recreate the paintings, but how they make us kind of see through the artist's eyes. And this movie obviously is one of the highlights. I mean, from beginning to end, they really compose shots that feel like paintings, and they really did a superb job of just, you know, kind of making us see what he would have seen, even though, like you said, his paintings are more abstract than what other paintings were doing at the time. So it was fun. It was just so fun to watch that, like the colors that they use, sunrise, sunset. It was just really beautiful to watch.
Yes, a feast for the eye. But now I'm very curious, Nene, what is your shining candle?
It's strange to record the podcast just right after watching the movie, because we really didn't have much time to think. But I know what it is. Mike Leigh is a very British filmmaker. Even though I haven't seen a lot of his films, I know of his style. Like, he's known for doing like one of his movies, Secrets and Lies, from 1996. I think it was very, very like well received at the time. And I think that movie, or his movies in general, he improvised a lot. Like the story itself is kind of improvise and the actors improvise and rehearse, and then after they have kind of come up with the characters and the scenes and things and the dialogues, then they proceed to film. So there's a very lived in kind of feeling to his movies. And in this movie, I didn't expect at all it was how funny this movie was. So I absolutely adore the British style of humor that we see in this movie. Because, you know, I really thought it was going to be one of these very serious kind of art movies, right? But no, the choice was very different. The dialogues were very theatrical, and the blocking, so where the actors will stand in reference to the camera, and it seemed like you were, at times, it felt like you were watching a play, not a movie, a play, and that didn't detract at all from the, you know, from the how dynamic the movie was. But the best part, where you saw most of this, where you mostly saw this quality of improvisation and vitality, was in certain scenes where they have a lot of actors interacting with each other. There's a magnificent scene that happens is it the Royal Academy? They were doing an exhibition with all the major painters at the time. And, you know, they have all the painters display all the way to the roof or to the ceiling, as they will do at that time. And the camera comes in, and Turner comes in, and we can see he was a well-known, well-liked character. He's saying hello to everybody. He's going to everybody's painting, making a comment, move this here, put this more red there, blah, blah. And everybody's just like, hey, Turner, everybody's having a good time. And then I think this happens like a few days, but we don't really notice. There's a discussion that happens because there's one painter who's very offended of the location of his painting. And he was already feeling very insecure. That's what we learn after, that he's a very insecure artist. And this whole fight that breaks out because of this painter who was so offended that his little donkey picture was placed next to I'm sorry. It's just the location. He found it very offensive that he's, you know, and everybody was kind of commenting too, oh, they put us in the ante room, like, or the back room, you know, all these things. And this scene, I cannot describe it. People have to see it. The acting is just incredible, and they all coming in and saying their part, but it's like it's truly developing in front of your eyes, like it's happening in real life. And the humor, there's something specific that I really, really love about this movie, is that it's supposed to be a very serious subject, which is Turner, the romantic period, this man who was just a little bit a lot mysterious and kind of hard to pin down. And he, Mike Leigh, kind of pokes fun at British upper lip. He's kind of like, and he can do it, right? He's and I love that. And this man dressed like perfectly, you know, with the top hats and all these very serious artists, and they're just having a fight and they're taking each other's hats away. Like, it's just and he does this throughout, in how pompous or bordering in the ridiculous some of these characters are, in, you know, how they express themselves about, you know, when they're looking at a painting. And many times I myself felt like, oh my god, do I sound this way when I'm talking about art? Because I go on and on when I look at a painting, I start saying things like, my goodness. So he's kind of poking fun a little bit at the establishment, you know, the great ideas of who these artists are and the heaviness of them and the gravitas. And in fact, he's showing these were just men who, yeah, were great artists, but they were just, at the end of the day, were just men with their petty fights, insecurities, and so on. I love that. a most brilliant shining candle.
Wow, Nene, I'm very, very, very surprised about this shining candle. Because for me...
Well?
I mean, it was... Of course, I understood the humor and I had my fun watching it. But for me, it was like an intentional element to... An intentional element to portray the purpose of Turner's work. I took it like this. Everything okay. we see is kind of comical, as you said, edging on the ridiculous. People on the verge of losing their dignity. Life is tough.
Yes.
Life is not yeah. pretty. Everything was unpretty. No? Apart from the beautiful landscapes mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and the beautiful meadows and sunsets and so on, life was unpretty. It was a tiny bit grotesque, you know?
Yeah.
We see a lot of ugly stuff. You know, we see Turner was yeah. not a good-looking guy. He was already pretty. I don't know. He's 50s,
I think.
Not in the best shape. He was always grunting and growling. He had a housekeeper, and she was very ill, and her state was very disturbing. And we see, yeah, people just like, you know, being humans. And this thing of being very human, you know, of having dirt, of having diseases, of not looking good, of pig heads on the market and so on. That contrast to the beauty he wanted to capture and only have a record of that on his painting. That's how I took this humorous touch, you know, to kind of set this distance, because this is what he was always seeing. This was his life. This was what he saw every day, and how he always tried to find beauty in all this ugliness, how he still, how he could still look beyond that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's how I took yeah. this humorous no. take.
And I completely agree with you. That's an amazing, very perceptive way of seeing this, for sure. I am just nodding crazily because, yeah, especially romantic art is about kind of like the idealized beauty. Romantic art and painting is about idealizing nature, idealizing women, the ideal of an artist who is, you know, experiencing the sublime, just on a stroll in the, you know, in the evening at the coast. So that what you just said is extremely perceptive, because he was channeling everything beautiful that he had within himself, but also in the world. He put it on the canvas. So I think one doesn't negate the other, right? I think they both coexist. That he spoke in fun at establishment, and he's doing this in a very British, particular British way, and also trying to make that contrast between, you know, who Turner was, what his goal was in his painting, what he was capable of doing, and the world. And when you were talking about that, another thing that I think when you say that is that the movie very much makes a point of showing what you said, people being human. People, you know, their hair. You mentioned his housekeeper. I think her name was Hannah Danby.
Yes.
Oh, Danby. I'm sorry. My excuse. Hannah Danby. And she is portrayed in the movie. She had a skin condition.
Yes, according to some records, she suffered from psoriasis. So she had a skin disease. Yes,
exactly. And she gets progressively worse as the movie goes on. And So we have that visual too, like you said. And Turner himself is like a contrasting person, because like you said, like you described, he was already not in the best shape, he was getting older, and they also show him like being such a like a brute.
Yes,
almost.
Yes, he was rough, he was grunting. He didn't have any softness in his character. Even though he could see, obviously he could see beauty and so on, and he had a very delicate perception for poetry and for the delicacy on certain things like color. So he was very perceptive for all of those things, but on at least to the outer people, at least how they portrayed him, he was like a, yeah, as you say, like a brute. He didn't have the best manners, and he didn't look like a nice guy. He was a nice guy, but he didn't look like it.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to explain how, and that I think that's why Timothy Spall got so much like praise for his portrayal, because he could do both. He could carry that the sensibility within that the romantic artist had, or somebody like Turner had. And actually there's a few scenes, there's a lot of scenes where there's contrast between him being like what we said, a brute, but I don't know what a better word would be. He just, his voice was rough anyway, as portrayed in the movie, and he grunts a lot. He will instead of answering, but he was not a rude person. He was kind with people. It was just his manner, the way he, I don't know, his voice was rough, and some of his manners were a little rude, but he seemed to kind of be somebody trapped inside a body that did not reflect what was inside. Like, he was trapped inside a body that did not reflect what was inside. And I don't know, I think I'm talking too much, but to me, because I think about this a lot, you know, the contrast between the mind and the body. I think about this constantly, and about, you know, the realities of the human body and the sublime, and how me, myself, let's use myself as an example. I am always thinking about how do I escape the realities of the human body, and I experience the sublime. I want to deny this. I want to avoid, I want to escape the needs, the bodily needs of the human being.
So, yeah.
And how do...
To yeah. kind of elevate the think, human think, experience, condition.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. So I think there's something in there that's the point. Such a good point, Gabby. Such a good
yes,
point.
Which anyway. Might take us very well to our second question on the quiz.
Yes. And our second question of the quiz is, what is your sweaty quick, Gabby? One thing you didn't like about the movie?
Nene, I have to admit that I cannot mention only one. I will mention two, if I am allowed. You know that I'm always indecisive. And there's two things. Now that we are talking about this contrast and the sublime and his purpose on his paintings and so on, I still think that the movie fails to show his real creative process and his introspection, focusing too much on this contrast of how unpretty life was and his surrounding was and so on, and what he created. They left out that part on how do we get into his mind, and how do we as a viewer really know what he felt and how he came up with the idea of painting what he wanted to paint. That is, in my opinion, poorly portrayed. So it is beautiful.
Okay.
It is a very visual depiction of how he painted a painting. But his process as an artist is pretty much left out, or at least not shown properly. So that's my first sweaty week, and if I am allowed.
Yeah, you are allowed.
Mr. Mike Lee, if I could tell you something, it would be this.
Okay.
There was no need to show any love scene, which is not a love scene,
quote unquote,
between Mr. Turner and his housekeeper, Hannah. This was, in my opinion, unnecessary. That was very unpretty. And that is my second sweaty week. According to the Internet Movie Database, on the trivia page of this film, this sex scene apparently caused a few controversies when the movie was released. And it was most talked about. They don't mention what they talked about, but I can assume that it didn't have the biggest acceptance on the audience. It was very brute. It was pretty much how we just described his character. It was brute. It was a little bit grotesque. It was not nice to see. It was, for me, it was unnecessary. If the point was to show that he had a certain relationship with his housekeeper, there are a million ways to portray this in a way that would be more dignifying for both characters and both actors and actresses. That is my second sweaty week.
Oof. Gabby, thank you. Thank you for those two sweaty weeks, which, you know, sweaty weeks are gross, but these two are kind of brilliant. And they're sweaty, but you know what? They're very good. And I agree 100% with you. And I think that those might be my sweaty weeks, but I'm not going to take them. But to comment on the first sweaty week, yes. And you mentioned the interiority.
Introspection,
You mentioned introspection. Yeah, we didn't see the interiority. We saw just how he behaved externally. We didn't see the process of how he would, you know, yeah, they show the landscapes as he would have seen them, but we didn't have the feeling that it was coming, that that's what he was seeing with his eyes. It's just that what we're...
And the effect that that had on him and how he processed that. We don't see it. We see it very distant. We see, this is Turner sketching a landscape that he will later paint. And then we see him painting. But we don't see his reaction what he must have felt.
No. And you know what this reminds me of? Our pet peeve, or my personal pet peeve, which is, and I've mentioned this in other episodes of the podcast, and I mentioned it in our first episode of the season, which is, I love movies about artists, and I love movies about singers, dancers, painters, obviously, writers. And the tricky thing, the hardest thing it seems to be, the tricky thing for these movies seems to be to portray the genius that they talk about so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for them to show, you know, wow, this is the painting, but then you look at the character, you cannot put the two together. Or this writer is a brilliant, it's a genius, and then they read the piece of poetry, and it's just like, oh. And I think this happens a lot, mostly with fictional characters, right? Because historical characters, obviously, you have the actual work, so it's a little less of a problem. But yeah, and why we mentioned this in our first episode, and please, if you haven't listened to it, it's our episode about Hilma af Klint. And we discussed it at length because in that movie, this was the thing that took it from a regular biopic to an extraordinary experience for the viewer. We were inside her head.
Yes.
And we saw the paintings be created inside her head.
Yes.
And this was such a wonderful thing to portray. Like, this is what we want to feel. And you are completely right. is very external. Everything is external. There's nothing interior.
We don't see into his mind. We don't see his. We don't get into his artist mind.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned it, because I didn't really want to compare it to Hilma, but that was, of course, exactly the same thought that I was having all the time. But yes.
Yeah.
I'm happy that we agree.
Yeah,
on that.
Oh no, we agree completely. And for the second sweaty week, well, I also agree. I was wearing a hoodie and I just tied myself inside my hoodie. I just didn't know how to, you know, not see. I think it was unnecessary. Not pretty. Like you said, not dignified for either character. I think maybe the point is to try to show that he was a man who didn't know how to show his emotions. Like a lot of those characters that they, you know, those male characters, people who are kind of trapped inside their bodies and they cannot, you know, be tender or express. I'm going to put an asterisk on that because it's not entirely the case for this character. But yeah, so I guess that was the point, that for this Hannah, for his housekeeper, he wouldn't allow himself, I guess, to be tender or anything like that. And I might have seen with the corner of my eye why that scene was, you know, people were talking about it. But I don't want to comment on it because I only saw like the title of an article. But the thing is that what people maybe were talking about is that this was not consensual.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course.
Yeah, so it was not consensual. And also, you know, the impression that we get of this character, Hannah Danby, his housekeeper, who gets progressively worse in her psoriasis, right? But she's also stooped. She's also like, she looks like she has other issues as well. So she would be even more vulnerable to whatever happened in that quote-unquote love scene. So yeah, I agree with that. And Gabby, I think that could be my sweaty week as well. I don't need to go into any other. I think, yeah, there was no need for such a scene. But anyway.
Is there? Do you still want to maybe reconsider if there's anything else that you would like to classify as sweaty week?
As a sweaty week? Well, the movie is long. It's quite long, 2.5 hours. And by the end, it starts to get a little darker. Like that lively humor that I enjoy so much kind of completely disappears. You know, it makes sense. He was getting older, more not nice things were happening to him as an older person. But yeah, I was a little mournful at the end. I really cannot think about anything. It might come up, but... The thing I wanted to say about the asterisk, and you tell me if you agree, is that he was such a rough guy with Hannah, but he does show great sensitivity and sensibility with selected people, especially women. And you mentioned this while we were watching, that he was able to be more sensitive and sensible, and actually his emotions showed only in front of women.
Yes.
Which was a very interesting comment that you made. And yeah, he meets this woman and, you know, you remember the name of the woman?
I suppose you're talking about Mrs. Booth.
Mrs. Booth, yeah, and he obviously he met her later in his life, and they end up kind of living together for a period of time. He was very sweet with
her. He was very kind with her, yes.
He was loving, and he would say beautiful things about her with softness. And yeah, but so I don't think he was completely unable. I think it was specific people, because there's another character, which is a strange wife, that also he's unable to say anything to. It could be that they are showing just there were some people that he could not even face, I don't know. I don't know enough of his life, but he did show actually, and he will say beautiful words and have beautiful, express beautiful thoughts
to his latest partner, Mrs. Booth. Yes, Nene. The woman he was not nice to was, according to some records we found on the internet, was the mother of his daughters. They were not married. They were not legally married, but somehow they had a relationship, and obviously it didn't end up well because they were fighting pretty much all of their lives. Nene, and if I just may add something to this, now that we're talking about his relationship with women and especially the relationship with his housekeeper, the Hannah Danby, I made a note while watching the film because this character of Hannah was for me very, not disturbing, but it was maybe the toughest character to observe and to watch on the film. Her fate was kind of painful. And I put a little bit of symbolism on this character.
Okay.
While watching the film, I was not aware that she was a real character in his life. So this is her character is based on a true person. It's a real person. So first I took it as her looks, how she was sick and how this illness, this psoriasis would show on her so visibly, and how he kind of never really took account of it. They lived together and she was looking very bad and he never mentioned anything. He overlooked her disease all the time. So at the end, I was thinking, maybe Hannah was kind of representing his inability of taking care of his own soul, because he was a troubled person. I think he was a troubled person. His mother died when he was young, and his little sister died when he was a small child. So he had some issues in his life. So I thought, okay, she's kind of like the representation of how he kind of abandoned her. And at some point he went to live with this Mrs. Booth and he kind of left her behind in the house. And he never really, really took care of her properly, at least not visibly with gestures and actions. He did leave her money when he passed away. So he was a kind man. But during his lifetime with Hannah, he showed very little care for her. And I took it as this relationship of this woman, this character, and her illness, her state, was kind of a reflection on how he punished himself. He didn't take care of his own soul.
Yeah. It was that makes sense, Gabi.
The tristesse of Hannah's life.
Yeah, the sadness of her life. Yeah, it's like a tragic character in a way, very sad character. That's such a beautiful observation, Gabi. She functions probably that way too. It's like a part of himself that he doesn't want to acknowledge. Because he was in the search of beauty and the sublime. So anything that he wanted to run away from anything that did not represent. And I think there's a spiritual aspect to his paintings as well. And again, the dichotomy between the spiritual and the body, you know, the ugliness, the illness of the body and the spiritual, what he wanted to elevate. So, it makes sense, Gabi. It's a nice observation. So we are going a little bit long. So let's continue with the next question. We have two questions left. The next question on our quiz. What is your stolen costume or prop? What piece of clothing or prop would you like to keep from the movie?
This is a very difficult question because it's either going to be a painting or an entire household.
Very getting more ambitious.
The house of Mrs. Booth was so cute. At the late stage of his life, he shared a house in a little town. Well, it wasn't a little town, it was Chelsea. In a little stony street with this Mrs. Booth. And it just looked so beautiful. And she kept it so impeccably cozy and clean. It was a beautiful house. One could feel the warmth of how she kept it. So, yeah, if I could, I could maybe keep the house of Mrs. Booth.
a lovely house.
Very traditional, very cozy. How about you, Nene? Would you like to give something smaller than a house?
Yes. I was thinking about it during the movie, and I'm going to pick two things, but one is intangible and the other one is tangible. So I'm going to start with the tangible one. Turner, as played by Timothy Spall, was not a good-looking guy, like you said, just as he's played, right? Like rough and not in shape, or, you know, getting a little older and so on. But he had this very classic 19th century coat that is like what you see in romantic paintings, you know, with the collar up a little bit and just short in the front and then the long part
short
the
on
back.
The waist, yes.
Uh-huh. And it was like, yes, short on the waist and like a navy blue but dark. Oh, I really want that.
I can perfectly picture you trying to ride like George Sand. Wear that coat.
Just like
by the light of a candle.
Exactly. I am dressed as a man, as George Sand would have been in 1830 something in Paris, wearing that coat and moving about in the salons and, you know, talking to people. I love. No, really, that was a piece of a costume that I love. But the other one, which is intangible, is more a feeling that I want to take with me from the movie. And it was the very opening scene. The opening scene of this film is magnificent. And it's a masterpiece of an opening scene. And that's when you see, you know, you have even though he made that scene with, you know, that we think we shouldn't be there, this is a master. Mike Lee's a master, right? And this movie is master. This opening is masterful. And it's just, we open on a sunrise and we see a windmill, right? And we see two women approaching, just coming from the distance. And you can see they are dressed like milkmaids or, you know.
Like Dutch milkmaids.
Yeah, people from the coast. Mm-hmm. Dutch milkmaids. And they're coming and they slowly approach. And the scene is basically the sunrise. You see this in the distance. There's a river that flows, obviously, because of the windmill. And it's just no music. I don't think it's any music. I think it's just the sound of the morning and these two women walking by, speaking in Dutch. Oh, I am in love with that scene because I love my favorite light of all lights is morning light. And especially early morning light. And this is a very early morning light. You can see this is like 7 a.m. on a spring day. And just the conversation, it was just very, it felt real. It felt like I was there at that time. This is amazing filmmaking.
I totally agree with that scene. It was really, really beautiful. And when you say it's funny, then you say it feels real. Yes, the feeling, yes. But actually, it was so perfect that it looked like a painting.
Exactly. Yeah. But maybe what takes it to the next level is the sound. Mm. And that's the thing that movies do, right? Because, it was definitely frame. Actually, a lot of the movie is framed like paintings in the sense that the camera is fixed. You know, this movie, there's a lot of fixed camera and then the people move about, but the camera doesn't move, it stays, so you have always the same perspective. So true, it was a frame as a painting, but the sound made it so vivid to me. And it truly, again, the sublime.
Beautiful.
So
You
I'm
take it
taking
there.
that.
Beautiful.
Okay. So to finish, Gabby, let's do our rating, which is not the most exciting part of our quiz, but anyway, let's try it just to keep track. I'm sorry, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the next question is, if given the chance, would you time travel to the period?
Nene, this is a very good question that I actually asked myself recently while doing my homework on this period of art history, realism, beginning until the mid 19th century. And I was a little bit torn, you know. I was like, might be interesting. There was the steam engine. Was the birth of the steam engine, the beginning of industrialization. So it was actually a kind of exciting era. A lot of things were happening. People were starting to, reshape their conception of time and space, and impressionism just around the corner, when everything began to be a little bit more loose and so on. So one could say there were so many exciting things happening at this time. But I guess watching this film, I guess I would rather not. I would rather not on this verge between, old and new. It must have been kind of uncomfortable. And I think the period of art that would really fascinate me comes a little bit later. So I think I would rather keep my ticket to time travel to go later, later back in time.
Oh, I
Yeah,
see.
I don't know. And the fashion, I don't know. It doesn't really appeal to me at the moment, at least not in these circumstances. Around Turner.
Exactly, with Mr. Around Turner. Yeah, I don't know. I get
I'm
it. I
very
get it.
curious to hear about you. Would you take the train ticket to time travel to?
I am so predictable. I'm gonna nuance my answer this time because I'm always so boring. Let's say if I had choices, I would not choose this one.
Yes. Okay.
I've said this in different episodes. The fashion of the time for women is not my favorite. And this is Queen Victoria is the reign of Queen Victoria,
Yes.
so it seems very cons very con it's one of the most conservative kind of like the dress for women, and the hair, like the specific hairdo is like with the rolls, and it's just very static and very bur like boring, like very feminine, like the distinction became even more like
Accentuated.
very feminine. Accentuated, thank you for the word. So yeah, I wouldn't go there because, first of all, because of the fashion, and also if we're talking about this specific, I think the movie happens in the when he was 50, so oh actually, so it's like around 18
Yeah, 1825
1820.
until 1850, 51.
Now I'm torn because I do love the romantic period. That is, I identify with that movement a lot, even though it truly kind of mess everything up with their notion of the artist. We're still suffering from that. But your son was living at this time, Chopin.
But not in London.
So, not in London, so I would have gone to to Paris and the salons and stuff. But yeah, it's not my favorite period, to be honest with you. Artistically, yeah, I think the ideas appeal to me. I would have been one of the romantics for sure.
For sure.
I would have been going to the mountains. People were doing trips like this became very popular. That people would travel to the Alps to experience the sublime. This was something that people did. Like, we are going to travel to the Alps to experience the sublime of the mountains, the enormity of the mountains, and they will come back and talk about their trips and things. But this was something that people did, mostly men, but also women. This was the fashion. This was the thing that people did. But yeah, no, I'm gonna say, yeah, I'm gonna keep my ticket for another time.
Good that you're not going alone this time.
okay. Well, to close our discussion, Gabby, let's talk about ratings. How many wicks and candles do you give Mr. Turner?
Okay, this might surprise most of our audience, but I'm going to give Mr. Turner a 7. Because aesthetically, it was impeccable. It was very beautiful. As we mentioned, the cinematography was outstanding. The costume design was impeccable. The set design was impeccable. That was really beautiful. But yeah, this comical aspect, what you actually highlighted, was for me a little bit, somehow a little bit off, a little bit disturbing, a little bit kind of out of place, which might be the intention, but obviously not my cup of tea. So I miss that, and I miss this creative process of the artist. It was like a beautiful, like a very well done biopic, but it was just a bio. There was no much of the artist within it. So I miss that a lot.
Okay.
How about you, Nene? How many wicks and candles do you give Mr. Turner?
I think for the first time in our podcast history, we are disagreeing. And you know what? It might be the result of this new experiment, which is we just watched the movie and recorded right away. So the impression is very fresh. I had so much fun watching this movie. I enjoyed it so much from beginning to end. At the end, yeah, I was a little like tired. So I'm going to give it a 9.
Wow, very good. Yeah, it was too long. I don't know. But a 9 is good. It's a solid.
A 9. Frankly. Yeah, because to me, it's the perfect British period film, which is, you know, they are kind of like the inventors of the genre in a way. The comedy aspect of it, maybe it shines too big. Maybe I'm trying to forget the ugly part, because this scene that was so magnificently directed at the Academy, where all the painters are fighting, like it's just apart from me, masterful. But I enjoyed it as a period movie. It's like the genre. I enjoy the sets. I enjoy the, you know, the characteristics of the, you know, checking the boxes, but in a exquisite way, not in a boring, checking all the boxes, but not in a boring way. And I don't think I wouldn't say it's a common biopic. To me, it has enough, what is the word I'm trying to use? Enough, there's enough roughness, there's enough edge to it, there's enough different ways of showing the story that to me elevates it beyond a biopic. But now I give him a 9, yeah, for sure. To comment on your 7, I completely understand. And what you said about the comic tone that felt out of place. We took a lot of notes while we were watching the movie, and I'm just looking at my notes, and I have this question. It says, "What is the tone? ? What is the tone?" Yeah, it's uneven.
It's uneven. That's a good question. That's a good word. Yes.
Yeah. So I also felt that, but for some reason, the good memories stay more than the sad memories.
Very good. Yeah. It's a very good 9. Okay. And we didn't mention the music score, which was also nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
And it was certainly not my favorite, but I still have to give it an honorific mention because it was kind of innovative. Yeah. As you just mentioned, this was the time of romanticism. We could have expected a lot of piano music and, you know, romantic music, which was like the birth of so many composers, no? That still prevail until today. No? But the music was very eclectic. It was kind of like expressionistic, like very avant-gardist. So it was like an interesting choice. I would say it was like an interesting choice of music. But it was apparently well acclaimed.
Oh, yeah, no, and I completely agree. And it shows that, obviously Mike Lee is not just anybody. This is a extremely respected director. But also it goes with the paintings, like Turner's paintings at the end, especially at the end, were starting to kind of clash with the, you know, they were like at the end, they were not so well received. So the music contrasting with the period kind of makes sense. Maybe it kind of reflects the paintings.
Yes, it's a fair point.
Which were a little bit outside of their time. Not really outside of the time, but they were moving towards ushering a new period. So anyway, Gabby, thank you so much for watching this movie, talking to me about it. We have fun.
This was awesome. And it was a very interesting film. It was a big pleasure to watch it, and of course to watch it together with you.
All right, same for me. So as always, thank you everybody for listening, and see you next time.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Lorken Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rowling. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Wicks and Candles is on Instagram and TikTok at Wicks and Candles. Make sure to follow us and also subscribe to Wicks and Candles on your favorite podcast platform.